never to rise to power again.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Good morning. Well, as you recall, I told you last week that I had set out on what I was coming to regard as an ill-advised attempt at a sermon series for Christmas. I believe my exact words last week were, "This sermon's been killing me all week and now it's your turn." This time it was easier on me because this particular material I have taught more frequently, and so it was easier for me to organize. It still may be just as bad for you. We'll see. What I'm trying to get at is what the Bible means in the fullness of time when it says that Christ was sent more than one in the fullness of time, referring to the miracle of Christmas. And last week we looked at the opening of the account of Luke about Caesar Augustus and the governor Quirinius and the big Roman census and tax that they imposed on that. Why? Spread, far-flung empire. But God is always at work everywhere on the earth. Amen? Let's try that again. God is always at work everywhere on earth. Amen?
Amen.
There is no corner of creation where God is not already doing things, has been since the beginning doing things, continues from today to the future, doing things to lead his people to him, to save us, to pull us out of the fire. It wasn't just the Roman Empire. There were other aspects to the fullness of time, and I want to look today a little bit of that Eastern pagan world and what God was doing there. In the passage in Matthew, we come across the word magi, which from childhood we have kind of regarded as a mysterious thing. When I grew to be older and actually studied the historical records and read things, I discovered there isn't that much mystery about the magi. We know exactly who they are, where they came from, what they were doing, and why they were doing it. They were a very religious people. Part of their historical power and fame rose from their practice of religion. They were a politically astute people, excellent military tacticians and strategists, and part of their power and military fame arose from that part of their toolbox, so to speak. We take the word magic from the word magi. It's not the other way around. Magi doesn't come from magic. Our conception of magic comes from magi, when they didn't really practice what you might call magic. The closest was that they claimed to be able to read the future in the stars and to interpret dreams. They claimed to have those abilities. And part of their historical power rose from those alleged abilities. Who were the magi? They were part of the people called the Medes. Now, for what it's worth, that means they were the descendants of Noah's son, Japheth, through his third son, Medi, whose name you will find in Genesis chapter 10, verse 2. After the scattering, past the days of Noah through the Tower of Babel and all that, the descendants of Medi ended up in the northwest section of what is now called Iran. And like the Israelites, Husai, the Paratinaki, the Strukat, the Arizanti, and the Quiz later, so I hope you're writing this down. And the Budi, from whom the Buddhist people come. That one's easy anyway. Those five tribes had territories. The sixth tribe, the Magi, were something like an equivalent to the Hebrew tribe of Levi. They were priest scholars, and they didn't have their own territory. They lived scattered, like the Levites did, among the territories of the other five tribes, and served as religious and civic leaders for everyone. They practiced the Zoroastrian religion. Remember, I told you that Augustus became, at that point in world history, the biggest of all the big dogs so far in the Roman Empire, outstripping those that had come before. But there had been several that had come before: the Egyptian Empire, the Assyrian Empire, the Scythian Empire, others. These empires began to rise while people like the Medes were still practicing their scattered tribal life, the same as the Israelites, which meant that the Medes got kicked around a lot by the big dogs as they began to exist. The Medes were always having to pay tribute to this empire, or always having to provide slave labor to that empire, because they were scattered among their territories and not united. In the Bible, even some pagan kings mentioned, like Sargon and Sennacherib, oppressed the Medes in their time. And as you might guess, the Medes didn't like it. This experience of being oppressed and bullied and taxed and abused by foreign powers. As the 7th century before Christ wound down toward the 6th, one member of the tribe of the Magi, I don't really expect you to remember all these names, but his name was Cyaxares, and he decided it was time for the Medes to become part of the modern world, by which he meant to unite and form an empire. And he successfully pulled all the tribes and the Medes together and set out to do some whipping up. First people he whipped on were the Scythians, and then with their power added to his growing empire, the Assyrians, and they found empire to their liking. The Medes did. So they continued conquest until they presided over most of what is now Iran, all of Assyria, a good chunk of northern Mesopotamia, all of Armenia, all of Cappadocia, and some other territories they continued to add. To their south, another empire was growing at the same time that they were. You were more familiar with them. They were the Babylonians. And among the people they conquered were the Israelites. And you know this part of the story, how the Babylonian Empire was sent as God's punishment for the faithlessness of the Israelites, and how they had to pay the Israelites for their sins under the bondage of Babylon. And while Babylon soaked up the Israelites, the Babylonians and the Medes stared hostile glares at each other across a shifting north-south border, each wanting to conquer the other, neither wanting to start the war, because nobody was sure that they could win. And finally, a treaty was struck in which the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar, who we know a little bit, married off one of his daughters to Cyaxares, the Magi, and king of the Medes. And Babylonia and Media had peace for a while. During that time, the Medes were exacting tribute and slaves from another upstart people who hadn't yet quite got the hang of empire, called the Persians. Until a man named Cyrus did for Persia what Cyaxares had done for the Medes, united all the scattered Persians into one people, and now they threatened the Medes so severely that the Medes were willing to enter into a treaty with the Persians that was about half treaty and half surrender. The surrender half was that Cyaxares had to surrender his son Astyages to be kept as a political hostage by the Persians to to assure the good behavior of Medes, as in, if you do something we don't like, well, we have your crown prince in our keeping. This treaty in which the Persians had the upper hand also had the effect of giving the Medes new military strength, enough that they finally thought they could do something about Babylon now that they were in partnership with the Persians. And so on the night that Belshazzar, of whom you know, last descendant of Nebuchadnezzar to sit on the throne, on the night that Belshazzar read the handwriting on the wall, Darius, the Mede, with military backing from Cyrus, the Persian, diverted the waters of the Euphrates River and marched an army under the city wall of Babylon and took over. We're getting to the important part. You know about Darius, and you know about Daniel, and you know about the lion's den. You know about Daniel being thrown into the lion's den. And you know about Daniel being taken out of the lion's den. And when Daniel was taken out of the lion's den, he was made chief over the wise men of a Median king. The wise men of the Medes were the Magi. Daniel became, for a considerable number of years, their chief. In time shortly to come, the Persians would become increasingly oppressive to their partners, Medes. And the Magi tried to repeat their performance of the former century and get their people together and rise up and throw off the yoke of oppression. And the Medes got squashed like bugs by the Persians, never to rise to power again. The Magi continued to be used as wise men by other powers from those positions next to the throne. This drove to do two things. The first was to preserve the extensive body of knowledge of which they were custodians. The second was, using such access to power as they could, to make life easier for things once taught them by their one-time chief, the Hebrew prophet, statesman, Daniel. Daniel led the Magi past the midpoint of the 5th century before Christ, which means that in addition to the visions that God had given Daniel personally, he would have been familiar with and passed on prophecies like this one. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. And those who live in a dark land, the light will shine upon them. And you, capital Y, you shall multiply the nation. You shall increase their gladness. They will be glad in your presence, as with the gladness of harvest, as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For you will break the yoke of their burden and the staff from their shoulders and the rod of their oppressor, as in the battle of Midian. And every boot of the booted warrior in battle tumult and the cloak rolled in blood shall be for burning in the fire. For child will be born to us. A son will be given. And the government will be upon his shoulders. And his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And there will be no end to the increase of his government or of peace on the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and righteousness from then on and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this through Daniel. The Magi will know this prophecy. They would also know the substance and the interpretations of Daniel's own prophetic vision. They would know how he forecasted that the Babylonian, Median, and Persian empires would each fall in turn, and then would come the Greeks, and then would come the Romans, and in that day, with the awful, terrible, ferocious, strong Roman Empire rose, a stone not made with hands would roll from God's holy mountain into the midst of it and shatter not only the Roman Empire, but all empires forever. And the Ancient of Days would rise up at last, and the Son of Man would be presented. Read the book of Daniel. It's all there. All of this, they would have known the Magi from their one-time chief, the Hebrew prophet statesman, Daniel. And these men were older, who claimed the ability to read the future in the stars, were finally given a true star to follow. And following it, to seek the fulfillment of the promises entrusted to them. So at least three. The number three is kind of legendary based on the number of gifts that they carried in the New Testament. At least three of them, famously named Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar, got on their camels, one of whom was famously named Saturn, and had nine humps. Okay, there was only one in the 8 o'clock service, followed by reference there. A few more of them. And they wrote, what were they searching for? Well, they have known war and oppression and the building and the breaking of empires. They had known betrayal, conquest, and subjugation, crushing, painful, humiliating loss. They had been at the bottom of the food chain and rose to the top and been cast down to the bottom again. They had been on the throne, and they had stood as advisors beside the throne, and they had seen the way that politics always ends up in cruelty and oppression. They had seen that there was no end to the evil in human affairs, but they had been promised the Prince of Peace, to whose government there would be no end, whose peace would be everlasting. They had been promised the end of the jackboot and the blood-soaked robe and the breaking of the rod of oppression. They had seen what the world gives. And they had been promised something better. So they took their gifts and they got off their camel and they rode, following the star. They spent a lot of money, not just on the gifts they carried all the way to the journey's conclusion, but on the journey itself. And they took a lot of risks, bandits, dangers of the road, local wolves. And though we know the story of Herod, he is surely not the only king with whom they had to deal on the way. They did all of this because they deemed that what they were looking for was better than anything they had yet known. And in Bethlehem, at the conclusion of a long series of events in which the hand of God seen, they found him. I've gone through all this, the historical and the biblical and the point of intersection between the two, so that we can do two things. One is to reach a conclusion, and the other is to ask a question. Conclusion. God is always at work everywhere.
Amen.
The threads that led to the fullness of time travel. We have looked at two distinct people, groups, and empires over a long period of history, and if we want to keep going, we could, because that is not the end. Those threads traveled through all men and nations and came together in Bethlehem. The world prepared to receive the Christ. Question. There is still what the world has to offer, and there is still what God offers through Jesus Christ. Which do we prefer? It seems to me that the world has not become less dark and awful and rotten and corrupt in all the centuries that have ensued. But it also seems to me that there has grown in the midst of the darkness, even as the prophecy said it would, the beginnings of another kingdom, which has already outlasted several other empires since the days of the Magi. A kingdom against which the gates of hell themselves cannot prevail. A light shining in a land of darkness on those of us who knew nothing but darkness. That kingdom has come, and even now may be entered into. If you have not yet known it, seek it, for it may be found. It is worth searching for. And in this season, during which our attention is more than usually fixed on the coming of Jesus Christ into it, is all the more easily found. You won't even need a camera. And on the one hand, you won't have to risk anything, though on the other hand, you will need to surrender everything. But it will be worth it if you find Jesus Christ. Seek.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.